Well, why don't we start? Welcome to the first meeting for 2018 of the Expanded Budget Committee. What on earth is an Expanded Budget Committee? We have a budget committee that meets all year round at the county. I chair that. The other members are Leslie McBee and Claiborne, Dan Klein, Mike Sigler, and Glenn Morey. This time of year, under our rules, we act as a committee of the whole for the budget. And we do that by setting up these meetings. We have, what, six or eight of them. Kevin, how many? I've forgotten. Six. And they will be both presentation meetings and voting meetings. We're starting at the beginning with presentations from the departments to explain what they're doing, what their budget requests are, and if they have any over-target requests, what they will be. And then we won't be voting on them as they go along, but rather when we get to the voting portion of the EBC meetings. As for the presentation meetings, however many people from the legislature are here equals the quorum. So if there are 14, that's a quorum. If there are four, that's a quorum. When we get to the voting for the actual recommended budget later on, our rules say, for the purposes of making recommendations on the proposed Tompkins County budget and capital program, the budget committee shall be expanded to include all legislators. A quorum shall consist of a majority of the whole legislature, so that means it has to be at least eight, and decisions shall be made by a majority of those in attendance at any given meeting. So even though fewer than eight may vote and decide a particular amendment, since the full legislature eventually has to act on the whole budget, we simply set it up so we don't have to have a quorum every time of the full eight. I do have to say that this legislature, over the past couple of years, has been wonderfully attentive and has come. And I think we have everyone here tonight looking around. So that's you owe an applause to yourself for everybody being here.
We'll take it.
The pizza helped.
We're going to review. Pizza's always good. We're going to be reviewing the budget that was recommended to us by our county administrator, Jason Molino. I'm going to ask him if he has any remarks to start us out tonight. Although you heard him explain his whole recommendation to us at our meeting on Tuesday night, so don't think we have to go through that again tonight. After the presentations from the departments, that we'll open it up for questions. And those of you that have questions can answer. That's your opportunity to find out what it is about the department you want to know. Let's not get into discussing extensively our own opinions about things. We can wait till the voting sessions to be doing that. But let's get the questions answered so that when we make decisions on particularly the over-target requests, we do those intelligently and with the knowledge and education about the particular budget that we need to have. So unless there's any questions, Jason, do you want to give us a little preview? And one thing I would like to know is when we're going to talk about capital.
Sure. I will talk about capital when I present the county administration budget.
Okay.
And I believe that is the last day. October 11th, I believe, is the last EBC.
All right. That's usually a question that comes up.
Yep. Talk about that. Just one brief note, Mike, the rest of the legislators. This spreadsheet you received, it should be in front of you. Kevin worked diligently on this. It is the OTR spreadsheet showing what was requested, what was recommended, the net request, the gross request, any revenues that were part of that. And then any impact on the levy due to target increases or target requests. So they are color-coded, red being not recommended, white being recommended, and blue being modified. And if we have any questions, obviously, if there's any questions related to any recommendation I made through this process, I'd be happy to talk about that whenever the question comes up.
All right. One minor correction. Kathy just said, Jason, that meeting where you were talking about capital, I think, is the 1st, not the 11th of October.
Thank you, Kathy. Hoping everybody would show up on the 11th, but not the 1st. No, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah.
One more meeting. Who cares?
Yeah. Thanks.
So, having had our preliminaries, anything anyone wants to say or any question you want to ask about process before we start with our first department? Anna Kellis.
Yeah, if you could give everyone, because I know there's a bunch of new people to this process, the timeline of people submitting to Kevin OTRs that they would like to add to the list, because that is the prerogative.
They can be done any time as we go along. Kevin, when would you like to have them? Because usually they start coming in right before we start voting.
That's what I've been accustomed to, but I'll take them any time and get them queued up for our first voting meeting.
Okay. So the deadline would be the first voting meeting?
In general, yes, but in order for me to get them ready and have things printed out and actually reach out to affected department and agencies to alert them that if they wanted to be present, need a little lead time. So the more the better. I think we typically try to print things on the afternoon of.
So. One last question about that.
Can I just follow up a little bit on that and say that if we want to make an amendment that's part of the budget that goes to the public, it needs to be done at those meetings. But this legislature, any legislator, may offer an amendment right up to the night we vote on the passing the legislature, passing the budget, not the legislature.
Thank you for that clarification.
Martha.
I had one other last.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Last year you gave us a form which basically outlined the things that you would like, if we are going to submit an OTR, what things you would like from us in kind of a format. Can you send that out again?
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Martha?
And so the idea of getting OTRs to Kevin, you can make a motion on the floor anytime, but like, so you'd like to have as many as you can as early as you can, but it's an iterative process, so people think of things. Every meeting brings up something else, so it's not like if you don't have it in by this date, then you can't do it, right? So,
right, the opportunity that goes away for those that just come up is letting people know so that they can be there and having it printed, but that hasn't been an obstacle in the past.
Shall we proceed then? Very pleased to have our county clerk, Maureen Reynolds, here. And she's going to present to us at very first tonight. She does have over-target requests, one of them, which has been recommended. We've allotted up to 20 minutes. If you only want to take 18, that's fine. Go ahead. We'd like to hear your presentation.
Sure. I love going first, so. I love going first, and you guys forget about me later.
About six inches from the microphone.
All right, so. How is that working? It's not working now. Hold on.
Well, that was easy. Who's next?
So here are the recommended budgets for my four departments, county clerk, DMV, records management, and central services. The full-time equivalents, it really hasn't changed numbers. I have employees between 20 hours a week and 40 hours a week, so I just think we've expanded some right now at DMV is why it's just up a little bit. So our over-target request is for the electric mail vehicle. We need to replace our mail vehicle. So I like to talk about the highlights of what we do. So I go back through Facebook and I look at everything we've been posting. New York State, in its wisdom, has 3 driver's licenses now.
And so you can get a regular license, a real ID driver's license, or enhanced driver's license. They also instituted this at the time of our upsurge in renewals, so DMV is getting a little crazy, but they are still very good about, no matter how long the line is, it's still a fast-moving line. So we're doing a lot of education on the three driver's licenses right now. And I love this little machine. So based on the RBA, we have our happy or not machine. And we have never been below 95% happiness at DMV. So as you finish up, and you punch a little button when you go out, and it's really a great tool. It gives us all kinds. This is kind of hard to see. But it'll tell us what day of the month was our worst, what days of the week are our worst, what times are our worst, so maybe we have to readjust staffing for lunch hours or breaks or something. So it gives us a lot of data, which is really great to use and helps us run our department better.
May we borrow it?
I'm sure you want that.
We always keep pushing the keep it local with our DMV. If you think of any new markets or areas I should be trying to spread that word, please let me know, because people are just astounded. They don't realize this until you tell them. And so we try to tell them as much as possible. The next photo is my bunker, and I took a bunch of new legislators up. Not everyone's on there. Some of them decided to climb on top of it and have their photo taken. But it was a really great day, and it was a nice day to share where we store our records and what's there and how it works and the whole Cold War technology. And so if anyone's ever wants to go up with us, let us know, and we can schedule another one. But it's I always make a stop for ice cream on the way back, so. Hugo Light Creamery, so my plug. So digital records are very important to us, and we've been spreading it through all our departments, through all the municipalities with our shared services, into Cortland County. But we also want to do some internal stuff. So if you've ever been in my office before, I always said I was like the ex-wife with all the baggage. Because I had, you know, books from 1817 to the present, and, you know, there's just all this paper and stuff. So we are working very hard. Now we have empty racks. I put up on Facebook what are uses. Some people said store pizzas on or different things. So we're trying to empty out all our older records. They have been scanned, but we're going through and double-checking. The old historic books will go to the bunker. But all our records are digital, and we're just working on clearing out our office and hopefully making more space for other departments. In January, I did a video with Alan Carrison from the City of Ithaca, and we talked about our project. I think it's the third video we've done about the project. So if you ever want to get on YouTube and you're bored, we're up there. So this is for the county clerk's office. This is all our online records, so deeds, mortgages, you know, for title searches, court cases, civil cases. All our records are on there, and you can go ahead and look at that. Most counties do not put it up for the public to use. We do. Public records, I think, should be public. And if you ever want to take a look, go ahead and take a look at that. It's right on our website. We also have one in our Laserfiche repository where we work with all our municipalities, and they all have their own public portals. We have ours for the county and for the county clerk's offices, and we have all kinds of really neat historic records on there. We recently talked to our historians, and they love using these old ones. I thought they would be my hardest sell on getting rid of the paper and the books, but they love it because they can do it from home, and they're really enjoying it. So lots of information on our website. Shared services is what we do best, I think, in New York State when it comes to digital records. And we go out and talk about it, and we have user groups for our shared services. We're going to be having one at the end of October. So we'll have all our municipal partners, Cortland County, and all our county departments that want to come learn about Laserfiche. We are currently finishing up the grant with Cortland County, where we are hosting their records in our repository. We're kind of sharing, and we'll be finishing up with that by the end of this year. So one of the best parts of my job, I always say, is I have four great days a year where, I mean, my cheeks hurt from smiling all day. We do the naturalization ceremonies, and we've had a lot of you take part in those. I hope you've all enjoyed those. And anyone who hasn't, let me know, and we'll get you signed up to be a speaker. It's a really great day. And here's some more of the ceremonies we've had this last year. And then at DMV, one of the biggest things we try to do also, you know, we do the register to vote down there. We also do organ donation. Well, you know, so we sign up people for organ donation, be organ donors. And, you know, in April is National Organ Donation Month, so we can actually keep track of it and have a big party, kind of make it fun, decorate the offices, balloons everywhere. But we have 265 organ donors. We have the highest rate in New York State at over 50%. And the counties, we have this little competition to see who can get the most. And we always say, well, we're going to bring it. We'll get the most. But it's harder because we have less to draw from. So because most of us are organ donors already. So we're really proud of that. So that's just kind of a summary of our year so far this year. Any questions?
Glenn Maureen.
Maureen, mail vehicle, what's it for?
So I employ a mail courier, so he brings all the mail between the county buildings, and he takes all the county mail up to the mailbox and the post office and all that kind of stuff. We also use it for transporting records. So this week he would go out to Groton or Dryden, and he'll go get boxes or maps and stuff for scanning too.
Rich John.
Do you anticipate getting some resale value on, I think it's the 2015, is
yes.
it a Jeep?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the highway department does that for us, and they did a really good job last time.
Ann Corman.
Thanks for your presentation, Maureen. So I'm very interested in electric vehicles. What are you looking at, do you know?
Mitsubishi Outlander. So it's an SUV type because we have to transport boxes and stuff.
Full electric or plug-in hybrid?
Full electric. Yeah. She looked at it with me, and Tom from Planning has it. Scott from Planning has it. He got it for his family, so he was telling us we have to go see it. So,
Mitsubishi, what was it, the model? Outlander? Okay, thank you.
Martha?
Thank you. Hi, Maureen. So it used to be that we would get a state help on those vehicles. Is this 25? How much is the whole? Are we getting any state help on this?
$5,000.
Okay, we'll take it. And the site where you said the historians love what you got with the document, I think it's slide number 10. Where did you say that is? Is that
so if you go to my website, I have on the website itself, it'll say...
the next one.
So both of those are available on my website.
Okay.
So there's online record search and... Laserfish Public Portal are the titles on my website.
Okay. And I know Jason is digging into the into questions of the downtown buildings and facilities locations. What is your just kind of refresh a question we seem to ask often? You're now behind a security wall in a courthouse. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's important? Do you think it's necessary or important to be in the main courthouse? Or how do those balance out?
I need to be near the lawyers and law firms. So it's, you know, because they run to my office back and forth all day. So I think that's important. And it's nice to be near the courts, too, because things go back and forth.
Do you feel it's necessary to be in the building, in the same building? Or
not necessary. Some clerk's offices are, some aren't.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask my question I ask every year, going back to Aurora. And you mentioned, of course, that the loss of income we have when people send or either do theirs online or they send their renewals into Utica.
Mm-hmm.
Some counties have gone, and they always send a pink envelope for people to mail them into those locations. Some counties have blue envelopes that they hand out and tell people, along with a nice posters that you put up and explain things, but they say, here, don't use the pink envelope, put it in the blue envelope, and it comes to the 3rd Street address instead of to Utica. Have any thoughts about that, or is there a reason we haven't done it?
I have, but I'm not sure where to get it out to people. And so our main push really has been Facebook boosting. So I've been boosting more on Facebook because a lot of our population is younger. I boost, into Cortland County. I boost into my neighboring counties and try to pick up as much as I can. But for the envelopes, I did, you know, the tax bills didn't make sense. I talked to Jay about that one time, just how they were done. And I could take some to the town clerks, but not a lot of people walk in as much as they used to. And so trying to get that foot traffic was, you know, important, too, on the cost. So, yeah, I'm not positive. I think the farmer's market would be a good idea, just put a little thing up down there.
Maybe we got a few boxes and maybe not try to get them to everybody, but try to get a few.
Yeah. But, yeah, Facebook boosting has been really, it's like a dollar, and I can push out all over, so... been a really good cost-effective way.
Okay. Anna.
Martha asked my first question. I was just going to ask what would be your ideal housing situation, which is sort of close, but that at least one component is important, so I appreciate it because I can get a better sense of what your needs are. And the other is, this year I'm going to make an attempt to understand the budget more and more than I have previously, so if I ask questions, it's just for curiosity.
Sure.
The overtime that you have, is that at, like special events that you have, or is that at the end of the day when there are already people in the building for like the DMV, for example, and you stay with them until they're, that's what I figured.
Yeah. So we do allow time for that, but sometimes we're fortunate, all our dealers here in Tompkins County, we do their dealer work. They don't have to go through us. And so they've pledged to bring it to us. So we guarantee that we'll get it back to them in a two-day turnaround. And so sometimes, you know, McGuire sells 300 cars a week. They're also bringing all their work from the three Syracuse stores down to us to do. Mm-hmm. So, and we have some Cortland dealers that have come in now because Cortland County is so far behind. Mm-hmm. So we tell them we'll get it done in a certain time. So sometimes we have some overtime.
Perfect. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Oh, Henry. Henry Granderson.
Thank you. In terms of the vehicle, what's the time period which you typically turn over vehicles?
I think 4 to 5 years we normally do.
Okay. And also you were saying your location need to be letting their lawyers. Isn't a lot of the filing electronic now?
Most are filing electronically with the court cases, but not with real estate. They can, but most haven't opted into that yet. It's not mandatory. I can't force them. The court stuff I could force, so I did.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, anyone else? Yes, Ann. Ann Corman.
I'm just wondering if you could get back with me. Again, I don't have to do it now. But I'm very interested in the vehicles as we're going forward, you know, mm-hmm. environmentally. I'm only finding for 2019 a Mitsubishi Outlander plug-in hybrid. So... just wondering if it will be electric or plug-in.
Yeah, we got the vehicle specs on it, and it was electric. Yeah, it was full electric, I thought. But we'll double-check and get back to you.
Thank you, Maureen and Lana. We appreciate it. You were a good one to lead off with. We have the History Center next. Rod Howe, this is on page 5 through 17, or 5-17 of your book. There are two OTRs, 53 and 54, one of which was recommended by the administrator and one of which was not. Welcome, Rod.
Thank you very much. I also like being on the first day, so thank you. I am joined by Susan Holland, who is the Executive Director of Historic Ithaca, and I believe that the treasurer of our board will also be showing up, Shannon David. Oh, it just got dark in here. So I don't have the pretty slides that Maureen had in hers. I just used what was sent as sort of a base, but I'll go through them. So as you know, the recommended budget from Jason includes is $174,536. This includes our new rent, which is around $152,000. It includes one of our OTR requests, $10,000, for hanging on to storage space in our current location at 401 East State Street for 1 year, just to see how everything works out. To remember, we're not gaining, the History Center is not gaining space, so we just have to be careful about how we move things over. So we look forward to that year of moving over things that are currently in the basement where we are now into the new space. And then $12,500, recognizing that we are taking on more responsibilities in the new space. So that's how we get to that figure of $174,536. This really says it all. This is a game changer for the History Center, and we're excited about the game changer. It's a much more prominent location. There will be much more foot traffic, a lot more opportunities given the partners that we're going to be with. So we're very excited about this new location, and we thank the county profusely for helping to make this happen. But it is truly a game changer for the History Center. I'm not going to spend too much time on this. I think you know that some of our core activities include the research library, the exhibit space, dynamic programming. Everyone loves the 8-square schoolhouse. And then, of course, robust collaborations. I've tried to highlight a few things that we're already doing, but we will continue to have a strong focus on. So, for instance, oral histories, we're going to get more deeply into that in the new space. We partner with Historic Ithaca on heritage tourism. The new center will really be ground zero, if you will, for heritage tourism. So we're excited about that. And then we're doing some expanded youth programming. And, of course, the Tommy plane, there will be programming around that. So if you want to come back to that slide, I can answer any questions you have. It's just a few highlights. The major financial changes for us, and remember our, well, not remember, but just so you know, our fiscal year is July 1 through June 30th. So we always have to, when we submit budget requests, we always have to think about how it's actually across two of our fiscal years. But just so you know, we're on a July 1 through June 30th fiscal year. We have started developing a three-year financial plan, charting out the increased income. We're hoping to have increased income through expanded fundraisers and special events and seeking new grant funding. We think the new location gives us a good platform for going after bigger grants than we have in the past. So, for instance, we came very close to getting a National Archives Records Administration grant, so we'll be reapplying for that. So we're hoping to get more federal grants than we have in the past. Certainly our expenses will increase, primarily due to the increased rent, employee salaries due to expanded hours, and new costs that we can only start to guess what they might be in being in the new Tompkins Center for History and Culture. Just one example is that for next year, we're expecting employee costs to increase around $35,000 because of opening more hours. We are taking on new responsibilities. Some of those responsibilities have already started. I think folks know that we are managing the capital campaign for the Tompkins Center for History and Culture, and it's been the History Center who has gone after state grants and been awarded the state grants. So there's quite a bit of monitoring, reporting related to both the capital campaign and to the state grants, particularly the NISCA, New York State Council on the Arts, and Empire State Development grants. We will be managing in the new space. There's a robust, we call it a content management system. There will be a number of kiosks and display units. The History Center will be responsible for changing elements in anything that's electronic, so that will be a major responsibility in the new space. And then, of course, we're working closely with the other partners, and there will be extra responsibilities around marketing. And we've certainly volunteered to help with scheduling of the public spaces, the conference rooms and other spaces. So there's some new responsibilities. I've already mentioned that in Jason's budget, he has recommended the $10,000, which would be for next year for the archival basement storage in our current location. When I submitted the budget, we had not heard yet from Travis Hyde Properties what they would actually charge us for rent for that space. We have since learned it's actually going to be a little bit higher than $10,000. It would be $12,600 for the year. My original intent was to, I have asked for two over target requests to get through this next year, and then my plan had been to not put forward any OTRs next year, but then I would be in a much better position, and the History Center would be in a much better position to know what our expenses and costs are in the new center and to see if we could come up with a new base a budget amount and not go the OTR route. But we certainly understand the decision not to support the OTR that we put in to continue helping to fund our office manager bookkeeper. This is a shared position with Historic Ithaca. It has been funded for a few years now, and I know the intent of OTRs is not to have it go on too many years. We do find the office manager bookkeeper position essential, especially given all the grant work and capital campaign activities and going after larger amounts of funding. It takes some pressure off for me, which is sorely needed, as a lot of my time has been devoted to the Tompkins Center for History and Culture. This has been a very successful shared position with Historic Ithaca, and I think Susan would agree to that. So if there will not be that second OTR, we are requesting, well, it's already been approved in Jason's budget, but we would like, indeed, that one OTR of $10,000, again, recognizing that the actual cost we now know will be $12,600. We would ask that an additional amount be added to our base salary to ensure that we can meet expectations for being open expanded hours, meeting financial reporting and management responsibilities, supporting heritage tourism, and helping cover details related to the multiple partners in the Tompkins Center for History and Culture. There are certainly some unknowns that we will probably really not have a handle on until we move in to the new space and see what additional costs there are for operating. So that was why I was thinking it would be good to go the OTR route this year and then just be in a better position to see what a new base support amount might be for a year from now. I want to thank you again for your ongoing support of the History Center. I think everyone knows about the Ithaca Kitty, but you might not know that the Ithaca Kitty's real name is Caesar Grimalkin. So we have really come to have this be our mascot. And if you follow us on social media, you will see the Ithaca Kitty makes it around the county often. So that said, I'm ready to answer any questions.
Martha?
Hi, Rod. How are you? I will get right to it. So your new rent is about $152. What was the old rent?
It was around $120. It's about a $30,000 increase.
About $122. I thought it was something like that.
Which is actually pretty good. I know that I'll just say that when Joe, 3 years ago, Joe was starting to pay close attention to any decisions that we were making about a new location. We knew that wherever we moved, there would be an increase. Remember, it was a 25-year lease at under $8 a square foot. We'll never get that again.
But I'm a little confused. If your total net increase looks like the target increase is $37,000. $30,000 is your rent. But then on the slide number 4, you say we've got employee increases due to longer hours of $35,000. I'm not getting the math.
It wasn't a one-to-one correspondence. So the I'm sorry, so what's your question, Martha?
Well,
by the way, I have been joined by Shannon David, our treasurer.
Hi, Shannon. So
you're funded from other sources.
Funded from other sources?
This is just the county portion, right?
This doesn't show our overall budget.
Right. That'd be a miracle if it did, so okay.
Yeah, wouldn't it?
we've sort of committed to paying the rent, so I guess I'm confused as to why. Okay, so the rent is really the reason for this target increase. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the $152,000 is the new rent, and then I think there was a recognition that this is a game changer. We have to expand hours. There will be additional cost. So there was an additional $12,500 that got put into our base amount. And then how you get to the $174,000 is adding in the $10,000 OTR.
I can add to that, Martha.
Okay.
When we did the budget retreat, we had recommended a $50,000 increase in the base, mainly for the rent, and another $12,500 for staffing, for some additional staffing.
Okay.
So that's part of the math, and then you add another $10,000 for the one time. That's this $174,000.
All right. So $12,500 is for staffing. So the $35,000 you're saying is covered by other revenue. All right. And then slide number 8.
Well, and part of the hope was that the OTR request for $20,000 would help that additional year to pay for the office manager bookkeeper for another year.
All right. Slide number 8, you said an additional $17,500 be added to the base for more hours. Are you saying for next year's? I mean, it sounds like that seems like another OTR that you didn't actually put in.
We're not at, so since if we're not getting the OTR, so again, remember my strategy had been to ask for the two OTRs, give us a year to figure out what the new base operations are going to be, so I was in a better position to come back and make an argument for what might be a reasonable request to the county. This is a different strategy to, okay, so if we don't get that second OTR, we still have additional expenses because of taking on new responsibilities and meeting our obligations for grant reporting, et cetera.
But you're not requesting that from us.
Yes, I am. I'm requesting that an additional $17,500 be added to the base amount.
So that should have been another OTR.
It's in lieu of me not recommending the $20,000. That's in replacement of it. Correct.
$20,000 was one time, and base is permanent target.
Yes.
Okay. So if. If I, say, wanted to pick and choose, I should invent OTR number 54.5 and make it 17.5 and call it target for staffing, correct? Instead, I'm looking at page 19 in this section. So you're saying that's...
Yeah, I mean, when Ron and I met... The primary reason I did not recommend the $20,000 was only this was the fourth year now. Usually your OTRs go for 3 years if they're one time, and it's a discussion. It's really a policy decision up to this group of what you want to do at that point. Ron and I spoke afterwards. We discussed a little bit of this, and you know, my real reason for it is this is a policy decision. It's time. Mm-hmm. Usually this is the way you go about decision-making in the past. We did increase some of that base, primarily identifying of the additional hours that they might need at the History Center with the new location. So that's the primary reason it was not recommended in my recommended budget.
Okay.
Amanda?
Thank you.
Thanks.
And I realize I probably confused things because of throwing in this other strategy of the OTR. So anyway.
And the $12,600 is just too close to everything else.
Well, my first question is for Jason. Why is there a section in Section 4 for the Tompkins Center for History and Culture? Why is that separate in the book?
That's the enterprise fund? Is that correct? Yes. So it's a good question, and it's one of the things I didn't include in the presentation, but I was going to talk about more in my county admin budget, okay, only because we had limited time. But the short end of it is we own the building and responsible for the building that the History Center and all the other partners will be housed in. That is treated as an enterprise fund, or is being proposed as an enterprise fund, similar to the airport and recycling materials management. Right. It's a self-sustaining fund, so the revenues you generate from your rents should pay for the expenses related to the operation, maintenance, and long-term capital improvements.
So, okay. So that's separate from
it is, but it is, but it isn't. Keep in right. mind the money that you are giving to History Center for rent ultimately is then paid back to us and put into that fund because we pay for the rent.
Okay. And then my second question is about your first OTR, about the archival basement storage. And Maureen has an amazing bunker. Is there any way to use that and not pay $10,000, $12,600?
Part of it... Certainly we are. If it turns out we're going to need our additional archival space, we want to look at all the options. We just don't want to have to move anything else right now because we're moving a lot. And
well, she's getting a Jeep. So.
So anytime, packing for us is a huge, so we're packing a lot. We're packing, you know, over two-thirds of our contents right now. So we are trying to just give ourselves a little bit of breathing room before we had to move things again. Most of that stuff will come over to the history, to the Tompkins Center for History and Culture. We just needed some time to first get the first floor set up for the public and then start moving things over in the basement.
Okay, thank you.
Shauna Black.
Sure. I was wondering, can you tell me if the History Center has met their revenue or their fundraising goals?
The History Center or the Tompkins Center for History and Culture?
Sorry, the Tompkins Center for History and Culture.
So the capital can it is confusing, isn't it? Especially since the acronyms are so close. We're at around 60% of the capital campaign.
Okay.
There's a special effort in the next 2 months to try to get up to 80%. So we feel that we're doing okay. We're getting... it's public knowledge, so I'll just say it was very interesting on Tuesday to walk across the street and get a check for $500,000 from the Park Foundation. It's a low-interest loan, but I have never been handed a $500,000 check before. Mm-hmm. I probably never will again. And then there's another entity that will be kicking in another $500,000 loan because all the construction is happening now, but the state funding and the capital campaign money will come in over a 2 or 3 year period.
So that's not considered contributing to the fundraising? Right, that's a loan.
That's a loan.
Okay. And my second question is, are you assuming that the revenue that's received from visitors to the History Center, or I'm sorry, the Tompkins County?
Tompkins Center.
Just call it the TCHC.
Yes.
Yeah.
Will be able to sustain all of the bills minus what the county contributes?
Well, remember, we don't charge
right.
People coming to the History Center.
Okay.
Since it receives county funding, you come to the History Center for free. We find revenue in every other possible way we can possibly meet. Our strategy is to do, we've never been one of those organizations that has one big fundraiser. So we're starting to look at either one major fundraiser or two or three significant fundraisers. And then, of course, going after, we do think that this is providing new opportunities for grants
okay.
That we haven't been able to go after before. Does that okay. answer
sure.
your question?
Thank you.
Rich John.
I guess I'd ask you just to elaborate a little bit about the special bookkeeping issues you have because of the capital campaign, the construction project, and the many partners that are involved in the TCHC. And maybe, Susan, you'd want to say something as well. This seems like a very, very busy time, having attended a lot of the meetings.
It is. And so, Susan, if you want to come up. I can't tell you how much time I've spent, and then Nancy follows up. Nancy is the name of our office manager, bookkeeper, working with NISCA on just getting all the paperwork signed that we need to get the first third payment. I mean, it's well, you've all worked with state grants before, so you know. And then the capital campaign is another time sink. I mean, to really keep track of everything and do the reports that are demanded by the capital campaign members and the partners of TCHC.
I have nothing to add to that, except it's really time intensive, and then there often is a program audit after that as well. So you're really monitored very closely, and in order to make your cash flow work, it takes. I've had a lot of experience with it when I worked in Albany. So,
thank you,
Anna.
Two questions. You talked about foot traffic. You're expecting a significant increase, which of course you would because you'll be on the commons. Which triggered the thought of what your current foot traffic is?
We get about, so this includes folks who go to the 8 Square Schoolhouse. It's around 15,000. We've tried to be conservative at the Commons, but the number that I think is in the brochure that we use is 30,000.
Doubling that.
Right. And that's, I think that's probably fairly conservative because many partners will be part of that. It will be the base for heritage tourism, the visitor center, is there.
Another question about the grants, following up on that. How many grants do you have out that you're still waiting to hear responses of? And are there grants that you intend to apply
Anna,
to? Can you hear me?
Signal up there. Watch your microphone.
Too far away? Okay. So you were talking about grants. And so two questions. One, are there grants that are pending that you're still waiting to hear from that could contribute to the capital grant? And then the other is, are there grants down the pike that you intend to apply to be part of that capital?
Probably more grants to help with programming. At this point, we're not applying for any other major funding for helping the build out. The county has actually applied, or not applied, I don't know the right word. We're hoping to, that through Barbara Lifton, that some money will be coming forward to help. That's that $500,000 that we, there's no guarantee, but we're hoping that that would come forward. So we checked in with Seth recently on that, and it seems like it's going through the motions that it needs to go through.
So then last question on that. You have 40% of your capital campaign still to collect. Can you briefly talk about the strategy then you have to collect that?
So the goal is we have a targeted individuals that we've already started conversations with. So we're hoping that, and there's lots of naming opportunities still left if any of you are looking for a naming opportunity. And there's certainly active conversations with a couple of banks right now, so I expect that in the next 2 months that will raise another 200,000 or so.
Which would get you to 80%. You were saying earlier you were getting...
So 200,000 would get us to like 1.2 million. The goal is we're just a little over, I think we're at 1.1 million now. So we still have a ways to go, but we'll be opening up to the public. We've actually done pretty well getting those smaller grants, but we need still some of those bigger grants, and we're convinced that we're going to get them. Mac Travis and Jerry Dietz is chair of our capital campaign, so they're doubling their efforts right now to have those concerted conversations with some of the larger donors.
Andrew Granison.
Yes, do you... The basement storage, do you currently have basement storage?
Yes.
And how is that included in your lease?
Where we are now, yes, we pay for both the entire first floor and some basement storage where we are now.
And how does that, how does the cost of $12,600 compare to, is there any way to break out the cost now that you're paying for storage?
That is the breakout.
That's what we would be paying next year for that basement storage in our current location.
Okay. Also, with the shop in the visitor center, would that be revenue to you or to
visitors? So the retail space will be managed by the visitor center, but we will certainly have material for sale in it. So, we're not expecting it to be a huge contributor to our bottom line, but some.
Martha has another question, then I think maybe we need to move on.
Yep, thanks. It's actually sort of unusual to have an a one-time request for a staff function, and if you don't get that, replace it with a target request. But, okay. Could I ask Kevin, I guess, to prepare an OTR that identifies this 17.5, you know, for the target?
I was thinking that it would be the first amendment submitted.
Okay.
It would be an amendment to the recommended budget that the county administrator has put in your hands.
But you're not saying you're not recommending it, right, Jason? Or?
No, I haven't recommended it. I mean, I think that's the right step. Is that it'll be one of the first amendments. It'll be the first amendment you entertain.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Martha.
Just one clarification that came up. Not clarification, addition. If the base budget for the History Center also includes the 2% bump to all agencies. That might have been part of your math that was off.
Okay, got it. Thank you very much.
Kevin reminded me.
I didn't know that either because I was trying to make the numbers work.
Yeah, that was part of the math. So thank you, Kevin.
All right, thank you, Rod.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now, I have to leave. This was the only time you're going to ask me questions right now, right?
They were going to vote on it right when you left.
Thank you very much for your time.
And thank you also.
The next item is transportation planning. Dwight Mengel. And there are no over targets. This is section 4, page 256 in your budget book.
Hello.
Hi,
Dwight. Are we ready to go?
Go ahead.
Okay. My name is Dwight Mengel. I'm the Chief Transportation Planner at the Department of Social Services, and I'm here for our budget presentation. We are proposing to expend approximately $54,000 less than last year. This is in compliance with the amount of funding that we're getting from the federal government.
Well, you need to speak up a little.
Okay. I have two roles. One is as the federal and state transportation grant manager, and the second is as coordinating the mobility management programs for the county. And I just want to take a couple slides to talk about federal and state grant management and prospects for next year. We anticipate stable federal funding in our regular formula programs for 2019. Given that we were successful with working with TCAT for competitive capital grants in 2018, I'm sure we will probably be applying for those competitive opportunities in 2019. And just to remind you that last month, the county was awarded $2.29 million for three electric buses for TCAT. We also anticipate the NYSDOT will do its every 2 years solicitation for applications for federal rural public transportation program funding for 2019-20. In the last 2 year cycle, the county received $2.7 million for our projects. On the state side, we anticipate transit capital funding for TCAT to remain stable next year. We and everybody else in the state has been waiting for the announcement for the increase in state transit operating assistance in this current state fiscal year. That hasn't happened yet. I know TCAT and Gadabout took those increases into account as they prepared their budgets. In addition to working on grants and preparing grants, we do a lot of oversight of our sub-recipients for both the federal and the state programs. And we've been very active in 2018, and that will continue in 2019 on oversight. Mobility management. We are really looking to provide members of the public with informed choices to make on using the package or bundle or the mobility solutions that would work for them. This not only results in improving services, but we also provide feedback, customer feedback, on existing services to existing providers. And we also take a step back and look at areas that really need improvement, and I'm going to talk about that too. We have county and regional partnerships. The Way to Go program by Cornell Cooperative Extension does a very good job informing the public, employers, agencies, and community groups about services and their options. There's a regional program also operated by Cornell Cooperative Extension with Tompkins County and our six neighboring counties and some other counties. So, for example, Steuben County has also joined us for one particular program. The big improvement in 2018 is that four counties received funding, Medicaid funding, through the DSRIP program for a mobility voucher program called Supports for Health, and that is aimed at Medicaid beneficiaries to access services that a regular Medicaid trip is not eligible for, but for the aim for keeping them, for example, from being readmitted to hospital and other types of services, so access to prescriptions and groceries and other types of supports. That program was implemented this year. Oops, wrong button. Oops, let me come back up. Okay. And the last I just want to mention is we have a growing Finger Lakes rideshare program, which is coordinated by the ITC, and we've been very active in assisting to develop that program, particularly marketing and particularly doing mapping research. Mapping data where commuters, the towns that commuters are coming from, going to these employers and their counties. And we also look to deploy and support deployment of operation to improve technology used by the service providers and by customers. So we've been very supportive of TCAT's project. Gadabout's project is in its second phase, and we've contributed information for them. It would really provide a completely new platform for TCAT to operate not only its services but provide a basis for a for multiple operators to be able to reserve trips. We're also, we've assisted to fund videos being created by Way to Go. Been working on smartphone apps and really moving to have a more mobile platform for information to enable carpools to work better, considering how to do this to improve operations of volunteer driver programs. And Way to Go has translated all of the primary information by the mobility services of seven operators into Chinese, which is required under the Title VI program now, but also also adding that information to videos. So the last thing I just talked about very quickly are business models. Way to Go has taken the lead in really reimagining volunteer driver services for working with nine programs, and really looking to see how can we, for example, provide a common platform and back office for trip reservations and for operations and services to be improved, and they are to report out on that as a group, make their recommendations in 2019. And the last is the mobility as a service business model. We're working with the Shared Use Mobility Service Center of Chicago on this federally funded technical assistance to us to create a business model by next July. So that's a highlight of that. We have one person. And I'll take any questions. Thank you.
Let's start with Deborah Dawson.
Thanks, Dwight. I was a little confused at first because your expenditures were going to go down pretty dramatically, but the amount that you needed from us was still going to be the same. So I wanted to be sure I understood why that was. I mean, I'm assuming it's because you got federal grants that match your contract services.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
So when your services go down, your grants go down, but...
When the grants go down, our expenditures go down.
Right.
Yes.
But the overhead pretty much stays the same.
Yes.
That's what we pay for.
Yes.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Anyone else? Anna?
So you did say in the beginning, this is a follow-up to Deborah's, that you expected a reduction in federal funding, and that was that change from the revenue decrease... that you're the recommended 604 or 56,000. Is that what you were saying?
Yes, it's a little bit more complicated than that. The state of New York awarded us some funding this year for last year and decreased the amount of funding for next year. So it'll all even out in the wash, but that's not what you're asking me to show for next year's budget. So for next year's budget, the amount is less.
But their consideration is over a 2 or 3 year period, it'll all balance out.
Yes, that's how the state looks at it.
And then just briefly, the mobility as a service, you got a large grant for that, correct?
We got no money at all, but we got the value of technical assistance that we are now beginning to be able to access.
And just to understand that, you said that is a center from Chicago. What's the name of that center again?
It's the Shared Use Mobility Center. And they're a national nonprofit who's the leader in research and technical assistance in this area.
So when you talk about a model, are they going to ultimately come up with recommendations of a technical platform?
Absolutely not. Okay. They are going to help us do that. And they are going to help us create a business model and enough pre-planning so we would be in position to compete in future rounds at the federal level, which is the purpose of the program.
Okay, let me rephrase the question. There are many different components of MAS. One is totally irrelevant to the to a platform,
right,
which is the coordination of all the different services, figuring out how they communicate together, making sure they're using the same payment system. There's a million different things.
Yes.
So I'm assuming it's helping develop that system so that we have an idea of what business model we're looking for, and then you're saying we would look for a way to implement that through technology?
For the business model, we use what's called the business model canvas, which actually gives a one-page visual model of how your interactions are with customers and with your stakeholders and revenues and channels for communication and everything. And
that as well.
And that is what we're making use of, and that will include technology. But as I reminded some friends today when we were talking about this, is that I fully would anticipate 50% of people who are accessing this to be using the phone, looking to talk with humans who are knowledgeable, who live here. And so we certainly hope that the younger generation, I should say that, to a more recent generation, which is very tech savvy, will make use of all of the tech platforms and access that we have for these types of services. But we have to provide a lot of customer service for people. Thank you.
Next, I have Ann Corman. Okay. Martha Robertson.
Thanks, Mike. STOA funding, you expect it will go up?
Oh, yes.
With such assurance, that's good. Like by how much? I mean, percent, or any idea?
There's two components to it. One is a increase. Well, the main component is increasing the formula, which presently is 69 cents per mile, revenue mile, for a bus or for a Gadabout bus, a TCAT or Gadabout bus, and 40.5 cents per passenger. And then they get to the end of the year and they say, well, we have a significant amount of funding left over, about 20%, and they allocate that based on the proportionate amount of STOA that we have received quarterly for the whole year. So as a result, the county would be getting about $1.5 million a year in February as a makeup payment. Now, the goal that the state has is to increase the formula so that it radically reduces that 20%. Also, they're looking at a increase in formula. And they assured us this all would have been announced 2 months ago. So I'm not going to speculate on anything else, and we'll just wait and see what happens.
Okay. Thank you. And then the Rideshare Coalition, with we talk about mapping where the commuters are coming from?
Yes.
Gee, Fernando, we did that like a dozen years ago or something, right? So is that, can we get a report on that? That sounds...
Absolutely. And in fact, I'll have that compile. I mean, we've compiled this, and we'll have a PDF. I'd be very happy to share with everybody before next Friday.
I'm actually thinking of it for the Housing Committee, and it wasn't... But it's really interesting, and be very interested in.
Oh, it is very, very interesting, because we have it identified by the towns that people are coming from. Mm-hmm.
No, that's great. Okay, thank you very much.
Rich John.
I'm good, but I would like to just say thank you. Your work's really appreciated.
Well, thank you. Okay.
Dwight, thanks very much for coming in and explaining your budget to us. And
thank you very much.
Next, we have Soil and Water, our district, John Nagley. We're running about 18 minutes behind, folks, so just so you're aware. The budget is on in Section 5, page 48. There are no over-target requests. John, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm John Negley. I'm the district manager for the Tompkins County Soil and Water District. And, again, thanks for having me to present our 2019 budget. As you can see probably with the pages in front of you, our recommended budget is $246,974. That is recommended by the county administrator. And that's a change of $105,000 decrease from last year, and that is a result of one-time OTRs that we had last year. And just to kind of recap some of those one-time OTRs, we had a $50,000 one-time OTR for a stream stabilization engineer. He's still on our staff, and we're going to be covering him this coming year with grants. And he came from us from Delaware County Soil and Water District, working in the New York City watershed. And he's a part-time retired engineer, and he's brought a lot of expertise to this county of how to work with streams and restore some of those. We also had a $50,000 one-time vehicle upgrade. We've purchased a Chevy Silverado pickup truck with that, and then we are holding the other part of that for next year, so we're not replacing two vehicles all in 1 year when we go to recycle those out. And then also a $10,000 one-time for computer upgrades, and we've purchased five Microsoft Surface laptops, which enables technicians to go out in the field and have remote access back to our servers, which is very helpful for the mobile office. Like Mike had mentioned, we are not asking for any OTRs, but we are supporting the facilities department. And my slide is incorrect. Jason corrected me that this is part of the capital budget and not an OTR. And so that's for $200,000 for a new cold storage facility on the Public Works property. I have reached out to Senator O'Mara's office for $60,000, and that has been granted to the district, and then we've released that over to ARRL to manage the paperwork on that. So this is just kind of an overview.
Thank you for that effort.
Say that?
Thank you for that effort.
Yes, no, I'm more than willing to help out. So I just kind of created this schematic of the public works facility, so don't take this as an engineering drawing or anything like that. It's just something I did. But up in the upper left-hand corner there, you can see where the red boxes of the proposed storage facility. It'll be 60 by 100. It has road access coming off of Culver Road. It won't have heat or water in there, but it will have electric. And currently, right now, we are storing a lot of equipment in this open shed roof. We have some storage bins between the salt shed and the gravel bins. We're storing some of our vehicles out in the employee parking lot, so this will help to bring some of that equipment, materials, items into this facility. And we're going to be sharing that with the facilities department. So Arell and I have talked. We'll probably be sharing that 50-50. And there's still a lot of details of exact door placements and windows and all that, but hopefully we can start that process in 2019. So with no over-target requests, I'll just give a little brief overview of some of the projects and programs that we're working on. These are some of our seasonal interns that we've had over the summer. They've been monitoring and helping with our hydrilla program, the eradication efforts in just off of Stewart Park. We are going to be treating again on Monday to eliminate some of those infestations right in front of Stewart Park. We've been working with Army Corps of Engineers to pay for those treatments, so that's been a benefit to us to not have to pay for those with our grants or county funding. And a lot of our programs are probably in the next 5-10 years are going to be dictated by this harmful algal bloom action plan that New York State DEC has crafted along with the total maximum daily loads for phosphorus to Cuga Lake that's still in draft form. We have not seen a finalized version of that. But a lot of that is related to runoff from the landscape that we do a lot of projects with already on farmland, on private residential lands. And some of those projects, the stream flood remediation projects that we do, in the top right-hand picture here, you can, I don't know if you can see it, but our stream engineer is walking down this stream channel that had some pretty good erosion. We had a storm come through the village of Groton in the spring of this year, and that stream he's walking down eventually led into the backside of this house, a small little development in the village of Groton. So we've been working with that homeowner, the village, to see if there's some opportunities for rerouting that stream, possibly a house buyout, stormwater retention upstream. And then just a list on the left-hand side there of different projects that we've been working with across the county. We also have our hydroseeding construction site erosion control program. This feeds back into a lot of the runoff and nutrient control, sediment control that flows into our streams and lakes. This is in the town of Newfield. They did a culvert replacement. Two top pictures are where you can see the hydroseeding around the shoulders of the road and some silt fencing to keep some of that bare erosion, eroded soil from getting into the streams. And then the bottom two pictures are a ball field that the town of Newfield is working to put into place, and we came in with some straw bale and hydroseeding and stabilized some steep slopes around those ball fields. We also work with ag practices, best management practices. The picture on the right is picture of some fields with cover cropping on them. Actually, a couple of weeks now, you'll start to see corn and crops come off the fields, and we have some funding that will be able to help farms replant some cover crops, annual rye, triticale, some grass-type covers that will bind the soil, will bind nutrients, and keep those from flowing into the streams and lakes. The picture on the left was an orchard out in Newfields and some laneway improvements there. Water was flowing down that laneway. We helped divert it off into a ditch where it's now filtered and not just picking up gravel on its way through. And then the governor had released these Southern Tier Ag Industry Enhancement Program funding. Tompkins County received $1.5 million in 2016 to provide funds to farms for enhancement on the farm. Picture on the left is a grain processing facility in the town of Newfield. The middle picture is a silage leachate pad, and we put filters on those pads so that we can keep anything that's leaching off of those facilities from entering waterways. And then the picture on the right is an enhanced cow barn, dairy barn, with some feed alleys. So this is my last slide, but I like to throw this in every year just to kind of show where we are financially and the health of the district. So the lot of lines on there, but on the bottom lines, if you follow the two blue lines, that's kind of our net position and operating fund balance. You saw in 2011 there's quite a dip there, and we've pretty much recovered to a healthy state now. Which is, in a lot of respects, the help of the county and appropriations that we receive from the county. So this red line that you can see, the county appropriations compared to surrounding counties, we're kind of right in the middle of the pack there. And then Cayuga County is way up there. They have a whole different, they have a lot of equipment, own their own buildings, so it's a little bit bigger operating budget that they have. But this green line is just some of the grant repayment funding that you see why we dipped in 2011. We are on a schedule with New York State to repay that, and probably in the next year or two we'll be totally off their radar. So with that, hopefully I've saved 18 minutes.
John, have you seen a help to your budget now that you've been in the health insurance consortium of the county?
Yeah, that has helped our budget. You know, that was something that was implemented in 2010, 11. It was before I became district manager. But as I think across the board, health insurance is a huge cost, so it's a big portion of our employee budgets.
Thank you. Other questions? Deborah Dawson.
Thank you, John. Dave and I have the privilege of serving on Soil and Water Conservation Board. In addition to being a lot of fun, I want to compliment John and his staff. I have never seen a group of people who do more with less. You're efficient, you're careful, you're thoughtful, and if they ask us for anything, we ought to give it to them.
Thank you.
Martha.
Actually, you've been there, done that. So, John, you say you're almost current, almost paid up with the state grants, so existing grants are current and well documented, and they like your proposals, and you're getting state funding.
Yes,
things are current. That's a really big deal, and thank you very, very much for carving it back from that big dip. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Anna Kellis.
Having done that, does that make it more likely, or does that open us up to be able to get grants? I mean, has it hindered us having that much debt with the state, I guess, is my question in any way?
In the past few years, no. When it first hit, yes. Yeah. But, yeah.
I was wondering. And you mentioned, wonderful, the results of the, I think, 1.5 or 1.6 million that was given in 2016. Mm-hmm. Was that is that an ongoing program they're investing any more money in? It was a one-time deal.
It was basically a one-time thing from the governor. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thanks. I appreciate it. Oh, actually, I had one other question. You talked about agricultural best management practices. Glenn, I promise it's a short question. And this is just for my own benefit. So I understand. You mentioned a whole bunch of different seed. Do you do a mixed seed blend cover crop, or is it monoculture mix?
We can do basically any type of mixed seeds. It's really up to the farm and how they mix it into their rotations. And some of it you have to be careful because it can come back as like a weed.
Right, that's what I was asking.
And you know, the next year's crop, they got to deal with that. So So it's something that has active research behind it right now of what's the best cocktail of seed mixes.
That was exactly what I asked. Thank you so much. That was helpful.
Ann Corman?
Just a quick yes or no question. I don't want to delay things anymore. Will you be storing in the new building culverts? They're laughing because I love drainage is a passion of mine. They might think an obsession, but yes?
We can get you out in all the culverts of the county. More than willing to help with that aspect, yeah.
I've seen quite a few already, but will you be storing the pipes before they go in? Because I like the whole process.
We work pretty well with the county highway, and there's been a few projects that we've been able to help county, town, local highway departments replace culverts, and usually that goes back to like fish habitat and spawning access to upstream grounds that fish can spawn in. So,
thank you.
Yep. Jason Molino.
I just want to put two things out there related to John and his budget. By the end of this year, your lease will be up. It'll be up for renewing the lease with Soil and Water for their location over at Boswick Road. So that'll be coming up probably in October or November, just to be in front of you. We'll include the storage facility as part of that lease. It's not a money exchange, but just a memorialization of the relationship. Also, just want to thank John. You know, as we started the budget process, he had an OTR in there for upgrading some office furniture, and we had quite a bit of new furniture available down at Public Health. So he took a look down and is going to take it, and we're going to help relocate it up there. So probably in a month or so, you may see a contingent fund request for that movement of that furniture, but he was willing to work with us. And thank you very much for that. Appreciate it.
John, thank you.
All right. Well, thank you all.
Next, we're going to opportunities, alternatives, and resources. Deborah Dietrich. This is on section 5, page 38. There are four over-target requests, number 4, number 6, number 67, and number 5. One has been, four have been, at the right column here, two have been funded in the budget, and two have not been funded, not recommended.
Well, thank you for having us.
Welcome.
This evening. Binay will go into a little bit about the College Initiative Upstate program after we've gone through the overview, because it's another recommended another one-time funding for next year. We really feel like we're in a good position going into 2019. We're thankful to Jason Molino, too, for helping work us through this new process. I also will be handing out, why don't you pass them out, Binay? We've got more specific information on the College Initiative Program, including some work that Binay has done with Dave Sanders around the results-based accountability measurements. And I know some of you have seen that around mental health, so I wanted you to have that as backup information to one of our over-target requests. So you can see that we're recommended for a $53,900 change. And really the influences are that we've really expanded our services in the last 2 years to deal more with parolees than OAR had ever formerly done before. We've always dealt with parolees in the sense that they'd come to see us when they needed help because they knew us from the Tompkins County Jail. But now we do in-reach to the Office of Parole twice a month and meet people as they're coming out and help link them to other services. We anticipated that a lot of that work would be funded through a DCJS grant that we were a partner with Challenge and the rescue mission last year. And it ended up being that grant did not move forward. It was enormously cumbersome for a county of our size with the catchment base basin we have. We just didn't have enough parolees at one time to justify the intensive use of staff for a bunch of training programs for three people in a room. And we try to work with them to negotiate changes unsuccessfully. So we thought the work was important enough, though, that we've continued to do the parolee outreach in spite of the fact that the DCJS funding did not continue. Second major influence has been the growth of the College Initiative Upstate program, and it has now includes the college prep programs, which are partially funded through the DCJS, through the Criminal Justice Alternatives to Incarceration Committee. And then finally, the requests for housing assistance continue to increase. Our location now on the West End at 910 West State Street is even more accessible to the homeless population of Tompkins County. And so we have a pretty steady walk-in stream of people who are coming in, not all of them looking for housing necessarily, but looking for a bathroom to use, looking for a cup of coffee in the morning, looking for water. We go to the food pantry and have food there, so that we have quite a bit of exposure to the homeless population of the city of Ithaca, at any rate, not so much the outlying communities. And we continue to help them with our coordinated assessment tool that we're a major partner with the other housing providers in the county to get people into the priority list and try to find them housing. But it's not, there's simply not enough units. To be very honest, it's like we can do all kinds of discussions and work around the margins, but we have a notable shortage of supply, and that's really an ongoing problem. The two over-target requests supported by the recommended budget are $88,000 for the College Initiative, which is a $4,000 increase over this year, and $50,000 one time for a parolee slash housing case manager. The two over targets that are not funded are really the combination are combined into the one that is the parolee housing case manager. So we're hopeful, and we're going to be doing results-based accountability measures and reports on that work as well, so that we can report out how well that's working over the next year. It does put a lot on one person. It's a lot of work, but we are all cross-trained, so we're all carrying pieces of all the work. The other thing we're all still doing is we're all rotating the phone for the on-call phone for Endeavor House every 5 weeks. So for 24/7, each of us is on 24/7 for emergency calls from Endeavor House. That's a sporadic thing. Some weeks are absolute nightmares, and other weeks are just go along just fine. So, you know, there's no predicting when those emergencies are going to occur. So now this slide shows you the two that are not supported by the recommended budget. I had looked for two positions, and I think it makes sense to try it with one going forward. And I'm hopeful that you all will support that so we can continue the work we're doing with parolees. I think our work with parolees has really borne some fruit as far as fewer of the parolees that we're working with ending up in jail waiting to be sent back upstate. I know there's still numbers in there, but I think that we'll see over time reduction of that. In addition, Endeavor House is currently housing two parolees and three probationers. Okay, I'll turn it over to Binay to give you a little bit of an overview on the College Initiative Upstate and the college prep in particular.
Yeah, well, I'd like to introduce you to a few of our students. We have had four college prep sessions this past year, and this was the first.
Fall last year.
Yeah, and this is the spring. When we were visiting Harriet Tubman's home, and this past summer. And it turns out that actually quite a few more than half end up going on to enroll in college the semester after they do the college prep. But first, I really wanted to thank the Tompkins County Legislature for supporting us for the past 2 years. This is the beginning of our third academic year. And the paperwork that you have in front of you tells you the numbers, but I wanted to put a little bit of a face on those numbers. Because as impressive as data is, it's more impressive to hear the stories of how individual lives have changed. And in many cases, this is after years of dreaming about how to break out of a rut. Almost all of our students are in recovery. And while college is not a silver bullet, our students do report that college enrollment does positively impact their recovery process. It's a real grounding and provides a structure, and it works very, very well. We are also an alternative to incarceration program and work very, very closely with the Tompkins County and Ithaca City courts. Out of 34 students who are enrolled in college this semester, four were referred from the family treatment court, one from the felony treatment court, one from the misdemeanor court, seven are on probation, and three are on parole. And everybody else has been in the past, but is currently not on something. Here's some good news. A growing number of our students are moving from no jobs or minimum paying jobs to professions. And on one of the sheets, there's an example of three of our students who this past semester have gotten jobs, one at Cars and one at Lakeview, as a result of the programs that they're taking. And there are 18 out of our 34 students have children. I consider that one of the most important statistics, because it means if their mom or dad is going to college, their lives will be improved. And I have, just to wrap it up, a few miracles to report this semester. Students with learning disabilities are getting the help they need to proceed. We have one student who is extremely dyslexic, and he was just urged by a professor at TC3 to write a children's book about a blue dog, and he's doing it. And then a student who dropped out in 2012 was able to pay off her outstanding debt that she owed to TC3 by doing a GoFundMe on Facebook. She raised $8,000, and she's attending full-time and is a straight-A student. But this just shows some of the motivation. Then we have a woman who was homeless for the past 4 or 5 years, who is our very first student to live in the dorms.
She's a 20-year-old.
She's 20 years old. She left home at 14. And she's been her main address has been the rescue mission since 14. And she seems, we have a lot of support for her plugged in all around the campus. And then 10 of our 29 students who are at TC3 are receiving Pathways scholarships. And that means $7,000 that they get during the 2 years or 3 years that it takes to get their associate degree. And these are people who have been scraping bottom, so the $7,000 goes a very long way in helping them live their lives and go to school. And then finally, and I know that some of you know this, last Tuesday, I drove one of our students to the Ithaca Airport because he's a 26-year-old who spent the last 10 years in prison, and he got a full scholarship to Stanford. And he's there. I spoke to him this afternoon. Yeah. So, you know, I think we're making a huge impact on a group of people who have flown under the radar when it comes to the higher education piece. And, yeah, that's where we are.
And her miracles keep the rest of us, like, up enough to keep doing the day in, day out. So we really are thrilled with the miracles. This is a closing slide just on the relationship between education and recidivism that I think is pretty powerful. It's a pretty strong argument in favor of getting people educated. There's zero percent recidivism with a master's degree. But look at how it drops with each level of education. And that's just kind of important, and we're also working now more and more with significant elements and Finger Lakes reuse to look at some of these other vocational and trades kinds of career paths, because we know we have a shortage in that skilled labor market coming up, well, existing now. And if we can get some of our clients into those skilled trades, then there's a living wage to be made there as well. So that's something else that the CIU has helped us realize.
Questions? We'll start with Martha, then Anna, then Shona.
Thank you both. This is really wonderful news. The Upstate College Initiative, so Jason's recommended another 1 year. This will be the third year, correct?
Yes. Yes, this will be the third year.
Okay. All right. And, Deborah, you said we're getting a lot more parole, clients from parole. Where are they? And you're going into the prisons?
We're going into the parole office. They come back into parole here locally on Wednesday mornings twice a month when they get discharged from state prison. And so Jamie goes in and meets with them at parole, and then they come down and we do case management, help them develop a plan, help them. Parolees usually have a voucher for the shelter. They're usually at the shelter, at least they're not totally homeless upon discharge for a short period of time. But it gives us a little bit of time to try to get them set up with more permanent housing, help them with the job search, link them maybe to other training programs that they might be interested in. And we've been fortunate enough to have some vacancies, so we've been able to take a couple parolees into Endeavor House as well. But we had never gone in. We'd never worked very closely with the Office of Parole. It had been more catch-as-catch-can. And the way we saw a lot of parolees in the past is they're released, and then they're told that the next morning they have to be in Elmira for their parole meeting, their first parole meeting. And so they would show up at OAR, at 4:30 on a Tuesday night or worse, at 8:30 a.m. when they will have missed the Chemung transit over to Elmira. And so we would drive them on occasion or try to find a bus that was going that way after Chemung transit and pay for the bus ticket, because you can get, if you miss that first meeting, you can be violated and returned immediately. So now meeting them when they come in, we can kind of anticipate some of that a little bit better. It's not usually so crisis driven.
Okay. Anna Kellis.
Thank you.
First, I wanted to say I think one of the most impressive things that I'm seeing here, and just want to make sure I understand this right, you're saying, so recidivism in this program is 6.4%, mm-hmm. those that are in this program, and the federal average is 66%.
That's right. The average is 2 out of 3. In most of the country, it's a little bit lower in New York State, about 42% for men and a bit lower for women.
But for those in this program, it's 6%.
So far. So far, so good. But from my past experience, this is high. It should be down around 3 and 4, well, and I think we'll get there.
But Binet's used to dealing with those returning. In the College Initiative Upstate, it was with those returning from prison. And what's different with our program is that we're dealing with people who are coming out of the county jail as well. And so it's a whole different mode of treatment and approach, because if you've been to prison, you've had a period of time to get sober, to think things through, to grow up. You're coming out a little bit older,
yeah.
So that you're more ready for some of this. So I think 6.4%, considering that we're dealing with a lot of younger people who haven't even been to state prison yet, they've been to the county jail, is really promising.
That's wonderful. And so my actual question is, have you connected with workforce development, and are there businesses, local businesses, that you have connected with who are interested in maybe doing apprenticeships or internships with some of the graduates of your program? Seems to be like that could be a good next step.
Right. We're getting to the point now where we are having graduates. This year we expect to have 6.
But those who weren't going to college, we did the job fair with URO this spring. We also have established over the past decade some relationships with a limited number of employers. Now we're trying to expand that.
And workforce development as well.
Workforce development, yes, but their niche is a little bit different, but we have worked with them.
We also helped one student get into an apprenticeship program with the Electricians Union this year. No, we try to think outside the box, but as an individual, because our numbers are not as vast as they will be. Yeah.
Thank you.
Shauna Black?
Yeah, I am on the board of OAARD, so I'm certainly partial to you guys. And I just want to give credit to the staff that works at OIR. Is absolutely incredible. People walk through the door. It's a warm setting. They're greeted. And your staff is one of the best that I've ever seen. So kudos to you, Deborah.
Send it on to the staff because they are just wonderful. And the baseline is that we treat everyone who walks through that door the way we would want to be treated walking through a door. And some days that's a little hard, but we keep reminding ourselves that that's really what people deserve.
Yeah.
Thank you, though, Shana.
Yeah. I'm very happy to see that you're asking for one OTR to help with the Endeavor House. I know that whenever the idea of the Endeavor House, you know, in the back of our minds, we were talking about it, and it was a great idea, and it was much more work than I think you had anticipated, as well as the staff at OAR. So I do think that this is really a crucial position because I think the staff are incredible, but the last thing we want to burden them with is burnout, because I would hate for you to lose staff based on them being on call quite constantly. And I really think there needs to be someone managing that house. Also, I think the college initiative, the facts are in the numbers, and Rich will probably speak as well, but Rich and I attended one of the presentations a few months ago, and I know we've also talked about this in one of the meetings, but just to hear the people that are going through through this program, they're so touched by this program, and it really is life-changing. So this is one of the best programs I think that we have in our county, and I'm very proud to support it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And Corman.
Thank you, Deb and Benet, for your presentation. Real quick, I was the first one in my family. I come from a working class family, and I was the first one that anybody knows of that went to college, including cousins and everything. So it meant a real lot to them. And I've had a lot of family members struggle with addiction and incarceration issues. So I really, really appreciate the very important work that you do. My question for you is, would you like to give us another pitch or something to say, you know, what it would mean to have the other target requests that aren't recommended right now? Is there anything else you want to say to say, hey, this is what the difference that it would make?
The difference it would make would be if there was someone who was a purely housing case manager, there would be someone other than myself looking for grants to develop more housing and develop more models of housing. And that would be great to have that extra, which is why we, you know, wanted two positions to begin with. But I do want to say that, and I think I requested two positions too, because last year when the 800,000 went to ATIs, OAR didn't get, we got 14 of that 800,000 that was an increase to CIU from 70 to 84. But I'm also okay with it going with what the administrators recommended for a year, showing you our results-based accountability reports at the end of that year, and making a pitch at that point. I'm a little hesitant. I have a wonderful staff, but we have been really worked to the limit with doing another house at this point without a better structure in place. It can't happen, and I'm not sure that we have the wherewithal to do more until we've gotten through this first year with Endeavor, which we've already toyed with the rules and the regulations, and we've toyed with the way it is operating, and it's improving constantly. But we're not there yet. And we're also trying to make stronger, even stronger partnerships with other housing providers, because even though Endeavor is serving an underserved population, there is a huge population that is not being served in this county, which are those who are still suffering from addiction. And those people are still, this is a sober house. What this community really needs is housing for people who are still in the throes of addiction, but still deserve to live in decent, clean places when they're figuring out their path to recovery. And with the staff our size, I don't have the wherewithal. I mean, I'd like to retire by the time I'm 80. Just to be selfish about it.
Okay, I've got Rich, Amanda, then Martha again, and let's see if we can move on. All right, I got Henry. I'll get him.
Since Shauna invited me to say something, I would just say it was really totally unfair when you have to vote on your budget to invite us to listen to those kids. That was amazing.
I'll stop. Amanda?
Well, Anne brought up my question, but I just also wanted to say thank you so much. And next time you have a presentation from your college students, please let us know.
We will. We also have a picnic this Saturday from noon to 2 at Endeavor House, 626 West Buffalo. I told all the residents, we've been kidding about it. It's the first annual Endeavor House picnic. It may be the last, but we're starting with this one. And Rich brought down a grill, so we'll have dueling grills. So you're all more than welcome to join us.
Can you give us the date and time again?
She said this Saturday. This Saturday, 12 to 2.
From 12 to 2.
626 West.
626 West Buffalo.
A few of us will be on a bike for AIDS ride, but we'll be thinking about it.
Okay.
Martha.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. I'm looking, so combining the two positions you've asked for, maybe that's realistic. Is it realistic to think you can hire somebody for 1 year? Or, I mean, we can have the capacity to, you know, in our accounting system we can do up to 3 years as one-time funding, which, you know, would that make a difference in terms of hiring and recruiting and hiring somebody?
I have a person now who will fill that position, who we've been paying out of our modest reserve because of the DCJS funding drying up. And so I don't have to recruit for that position, but if we knew, it's certainly our hope would be that this one-time funding, if we show you results next year with the RBA reports, would be at least renewed for hopefully for the 2 more years, that it will be worthy enough.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Henry?
Thanks.
Also, you talked about a little bit, I heard you talk before about maybe doing another Endeavor House. Do you have any plans for that, or is it just everything's on hold until you can get staffing?
I always am looking, I'll be honest about it, but it's really difficult to find a house that's with an affordable cost in a zoned area that won't be as resistant to this population. So I'm always looking. So I don't want to say, you know what, in February we're going to find something, I'm going to come to you and say, you know, this need has exploded, which we did 2 years ago. I mean, you know, it's not like the door's closed, but I really need some time to recoup with the staff to talk about how would this be worked, how would this be managed, would we be able to find volunteers to take over some of this this load. And we've been very blessed with volunteers for a lot of different things, but a lot of our volunteers are seniors. And it's a hard call to say, would you go down at 2 a.m. when there's a problem at Endeavor House? We haven't called out that often at 2 a.m., but it does happen on occasion, and it's a little bit hard to ask someone to come down and handle that. But we're looking at different models, Henry.
Also, Renee, in terms of people living at TC3, is that something that you want to expand?
We do, and there are a few ideas that will be put back on the table shortly. We started a conversation last year about a house that used to be a Head Start house, which is right on the campus as you go in the driveway to the right. It's a perfectly sound, beautiful house, and we'd like it to be a recovery house for our students and others. But there were like half a dozen people who retired at TC3, including the grounds person and the provost. And we had to wait until new people came on board. They are now on board. And in fact, the provost taught at Woodburn Prison when he worked at Sullivan County Community College. So he's very positively inclined towards the work we do.
One of our problems was TC3 wanted to charge us a fair amount of rent for this house. And we had to renegotiate that, too.
Yeah. But I also talked to the provost about being open to accepting DSS rent money towards, paying off the dorm cost. And they're open right now to all of the above. It just we haven't had the time yet this semester to continue the conversation.
Lesson.
Thank you. So, Deb, I don't want to be ye old stick in the mud, but I do have to ask this question. Oh. When you came and we talked about Endeavor House or buying the property, if I understood correctly, one of the things was that you were looking to have in that house people who can self-manage. So what I'm hearing now after trying it is that it appears that, because you said, there'll be somebody there in the day but nobody there at night. So are you saying that now that you've tried it, there seems to be a need for someone to be present in the evening? That's why you're calling people to go down there?
I'd say there's a continuum there of people who are self-managed and those that we've taken in that just aren't ready to change. And so our calls have been around the younger, quite honestly, the younger people who've moved into the house, where we go through the rules very, very clearly and discuss it, and they meet the other residents, and sure, they're ready because they're homeless or they're going to be homeless. Right. They'll abide by everything, and within a day or two, every rule's been broken. And that puts everyone in danger. So I would say, Leslie, that there's just a range of need. Each person who lives there, regardless of their ability to self-manage or not, has a case manager. One of us case manages everyone. But some take a lot more intensive work. I do think that there's a need for more intensely supervised, not even supervised, but a presence at a house, kind of like a resident advisor. I think there's a need for that, too, particularly with the younger people who are coming out of the county jail. The people coming out of prison are generally more able to self-manage and make the changes they need to. The 22 to 28-year-olds coming out of the county jail, it's more difficult.
So is the idea, may I follow up?
Yes.
Thank you. So is the idea then to expand a position or whatever it is to have somebody there in the evening as well?
No, that position was not for that. That position was really someone to be to handle Endeavor, to look for grants for additional housing opportunities, to focus really on housing people, other than Endeavor House, to find other links. We do a lot of that, but if we could have one case manager doing a lot of that, it would take a lot of load off the rest of staff. But that particular position in here does not provide for a nighttime person. We do have a repair person who's living, and it was initially going to be kind of an advisor. And no one really had the skills yet to be a house advisor of the group that moved in. But he has a great set of repair skills, and he's developed. We sent him some trainings, and he's moving closer to being able to be an advisor-type person. But he isn't there yet.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you both. They've been very informative.
Thank you.
Nice presentation.
Yes. Thank you.
Good night.
We have four more presentations tonight. We are now 35 minutes behind. We're going to the Board of Elections, and Elizabeth Cree and Stephen DeWitt.
Good evening. We have a short presentation, so we'll catch you up.
I should mention, this is section 4, page 15, OTR 62, which has been recommended.
So starting with the numbers, you'll see that we are actually going down in our budget, and this is because for 2019, because we have local elections next year. This year we had part-time machine technicians that we asked one-time funding for full-time, and next year we will not need that help.
Okay, major influences that we're working with now, cybersecurity training and funding is a priority. State Board of Elections has been putting a major effort into working with the counties to make sure that, you know, we're as secure as we can be. They, the two commissioners and the two deputy commissioners, along with Greg Potter, Lauren Cottrell, and Roger Kotrefeld from ITS, went to a tabletop exercise back in June. It was put on by the State Board of Elections and the Department of Homeland Security. It's very helpful. There's some funding that's been put in place by the state budget and the federal budget for grants.
$5 million from the state for 1 year, and then I think there's 19.5 for 5 years from the federal.
And I think the next step in this right now, I mean, I guess the other thing that's been going on is that every employee of any board of elections in the state over the last month has been taking a online training on cybersecurity, which I think was very helpful. But the next step is that the State Board of Elections is going to be going around to all of the county boards across the state. They're going to be doing assessments on cybersecurity. And at that point, I think we'll know, hopefully we'll be, you know, passed with flying colors. But if there are things that need to happen in order to mitigate things, then I would imagine that's the opportunity where we apply for funding.
ITS has applied for $50,000 so far, and we're working closely with them on the next. We're not sure what kind of money is coming down the pike to us, but we're going to work with them.
Next, absentee voting is increasing at a high rate yearly. And the costs for printing and staff hours are unpredictable. An example of the cost for printing this primary coming up. I think we have a good handle on how many Democratic Party ballots to order, but you know the Reform Party ballots, because they are allowing all unaffiliated voters to vote in their primary. We're probably way over ordering because we have no idea. We have no. Track record here to go on. The next aging voting machine, the warranties expire at the end of this year. We did budget a little bit for repairs as we move forward, but we need to be looking into coming up with a program within the next year of how we're going to procure voting machines and rotate our old stock and put in new stock.
We did have some good news in a way. Our warranty ran out on our absentee counter, and our absentee counter broke like the day before, so we're actually going to get a new one. And right now we're using the companies for this election.
And there's As Elizabeth mentioned earlier, we're reducing the senior voting machine technicians from 35 to 20 hours next year. But then for the 2020 presidential, we'll be coming back to restore them.
Uh, And then this just represents that our change was the technicians at this time. And then we had a little bit of rollover money because we didn't have as many primaries as we budgeted for. And so we just wanted to put it towards voting machine replacement.
Questions? Leslin. Leslin at being Claiborne.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello.
Hi, Steve.
Maybe this is the first time I'm really hearing this out loud. How many technicians are there that go on this roller coaster of up and down hours?
How many? There's two, one for each side, that are half-time. And then we have these really what we call junior techs that have about 10,000 in there to help them get the machines ready. And then we use election inspectors to also get the machines ready.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Like I said.
Go ahead, Jason.
I just want to add two things. One of the things we talked about during the budget was, if you notice, the expiration of the voting machines. And what I've talked about with Steve and Elizabeth is next year, part of our capital planning initiative will incorporate replacement and some type of replacement schedule. You have 50 machines?
44,
we'll take a look
50.
At it. We have 55 right now.
So quite a bit of investment. But one of the things we talked about is making sure we incorporate that in part of the planning discussion. The other thing I'd like to do is just thank Elizabeth and Stephen. Over the past month or two, they've entertained the idea of possibly relocating some of the voting machines to the open space we have in the public health building. Right now we pay for a lease space, about 3,000 plus square feet at Hanshaw Road. It's a pretty high lease. Approached them about 2 months ago. We've been working with them and Frank Krupa and some folks, and we might have something to come to you in a month or so to possibly need some contingent funds to fill out that space. But they've been excellent and appreciate all your help with that and your text as well. It's been a pleasure. So just want to say that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you for coming in tonight.
Thanks.
We go to now to SPCA, Animal Control, Jim Bodrin. There are no over targets. This is section 5, page 1 of your books. Welcome, and thanks for
Thank
coming.
You. Our program has really not changed much in probably the last 10 years. Obviously, we see some years where we do more animals than other. We try and tailor them to demand. No OTRs. My major influences are missing. But there are two. I don't know. I sent them. But there are two. One is animal population control or overpopulation control, and the other is rabies vaccinations. Wait, there we go. Yay. It's a miracle. As you can see, you know, the program over the last six or so years has vaccinated over 8,000 cats. And why we talk mostly about the cats is, and obviously we do dogs too, as you know, both the SPCA animals, but also through our public clinics, we talk about the cats because they are the free roaming population that is in Tompkins County. So they are the ones most at risk, not only to contract rabies, but also to pass along in the environment. They're coming in contact with bats or other wildlife who are a rabies vector. So we try and focus those as the at-risk population. We had about 1,263 serviced in 2017, and as a total, 1,207 rabies vaccinations were administered. We always like to point out 265 were the free roaming, so those are cats who might live on a farm, have no known owner, truly feral, not suitable as pets. If we do find free-roaming cats through these clinics or through our own work that are adoptable, we will try and adopt them out if we can. But a lot of the 265 are truly what we consider feral or unadoptable and are basically returned to field. Or if they can't be returned to where we found them or where a member of the public has found them, we look for options to rehome them, relocate them, not rehome them. How's that?
You done?
Yes. No, that was it.
Quick.
It's pretty simple.
I have questions. Martha Robertson.
Where else do you relocate them?
We find members of the public who are willing to. Let's say we have somebody who might, I'm going to use a trailer as an example, who might have to vacate a trailer, family member has passed away, large cat colony on the property. That piece of property might be being sold to a new owner who doesn't have any interest in having the animals living on their property. We very well can find other members of the community who will open up space on their own property or outbuildings or farms to allow us to move that population. They are, of course, always... We like to say they're better where they were found. If they're living somewhere and surviving somewhere, relocating them poses its own risks, but it's an alternative to euthanizing them, which we'd have to do if we had no other place to put them.
Okay, and I think you really should take a page from Benet, and you should really have some slides of kitties and puppies.
I know. I know. We can
you
do animal.
You can bring a kitty. Bring a kitty in pictures. With you.
Exactly. We can do animal pictures next year for sure.
I mean, even the History Center guy, he has a kitty.
Anyone else? Ann Corman.
I just, excuse me, I just wanted to say thank you to you and your staff and Joe Hoffer, I think
is
his last name, so with an investigation.
Yes.
That after something happened to one of my cats.
Okay,
so
great.
Thank
glad
you
to hear that.
Very much.
Yeah, they do. He has one of the hardest jobs there, dealing with a lot of those difficult situations. So thank you.
Anna Kellis.
Just a small question. What is your total budget? We only see
roughly
our...
Roughly $1.4 million. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a little bit over that, sometimes a little bit less than that.
And where do you get the majority of that money from?
We see about $900,000 roughly through donations, grants, fundraising income. We see another roughly 200 plus thousand through the contracts that we have with the local municipalities for animal control or stray dog control, basically, and then another rough 225-ish through programs and services, whether that be our humane education programs, summer camp, adoption fees, et cetera.
Great. Thank you.
Jim, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, guys.
I'm going to reverse the next two. I'm going to take the county historian, and then we'll do the legislature clerk last. So, Carol Kamen? Kamen? Thank you. There are more ways to pronounce your name, I hear.
Kamen. But if I answer to anything...
That wasn't the way it was pronounced in the article I read. They had pronunciation laid out.
I'm just glad to be asked. I'll answer any.
Yes.
The county.
Just one second. Let me catch Kevin McGuire.
Jackie Kipola in our office works closely with Carol and sort of provides some de facto staffing for Carol. And they let me know today that they were waiving the whole PowerPoint thing. So the numbers are in the budget book, and Carol's just going to talk without slides.
Can you imagine?
Maybe she'll read us the language of war.
Thank you. I would like to say Jackie has been very helpful. And since I have such a complex budget, probably close to the transportation budget,
section four,
you'll understand how much help I need. The county historian position is probably the least understood position in the state. The state says you have to have one, and then it doesn't tell you what that person has to do. It doesn't tell you that person should be compensated. And this year I did a survey of all the county historians, and I'd like to thank you all very much for your support and your interest. Many of the county historians say nobody knows what they do, nobody cares what they do, just go away. And I try not to be someone you want to go away. So the survey showed that I have a position that you have given me great leeway with, and I hope I have done what you need and want. I answer your questions. I answer the community's questions. I get a lot of questions on email about about genealogy and house histories. I send those to the appropriate people. But you have supported me over the years, and I have really appreciated that. At the Albany meeting of county historians, I gave the, with the Putnam County historian, gave the keynote presentation, and it was all about suffrage in Tompkins County. And the point of it was not only what had happened, but how we have expanded our democracy and how our democracy is based on everyone participating and having an understanding of what it is we're doing in our government. So this fall there will be a book called Achieving Beulah Land that will come out about suffrage in Tompkins County. It has been supported by the Cornell University Library in terms of funding the publication, and you will all find it on your bestseller list, or at least I hope you find it next to your bed, something like that. It really is a study of how we tried to, in the county, early on, when many counties didn't have anyone looking for suffrage, how we made and defined democracy and how we tried to be more inclusive. In 2019, I will continue to monitor the celebration grants, which is the Tompkins County Tourism Program, and the celebration grants have gone up to $40,000. When we started, we had $5,000. So we're working on this. The municipal historians in Tompkins County meet monthly. They are a unique group in the state. They're the only group that works together, meets monthly, and works together on projects. And we have responded to things you have wanted, and we have initiated things. It's a wonderful opportunity for me to teach history and for them to teach me what they know. I laid something called Encountering Local History at the public library once a month, and it's a time for me to bring a document to the group of people who come, and we read the document out loud and we talk about what it means. So what did Callista Hall of Lansing mean when she said in a letter to her husband in 1848, "Burn this"? And I won't tell you. You'll have to come and find out. But she did. She was saying private things, and she didn't want this to get out.
But you have it.
Pardon me?
But you have it.
I have it.
Because yeah. Husbands never do what you tell
he
them.
He didn't burn it.
My focus for 2019 will be two things. One is a study of blacks in Tompkins County in the 19th century. I've got 7 chapters written, and I have 2 very good people who are reading and giving me criticism on them, and that will come out eventually. It still has 2 chapters to go, and I'm slow. The other focus for the year and probably for the next couple of years really is immigration. Who has come to the county? When did they come? Why did they come? What did they do when they were here? And especially, what was the county response to newcomers coming in, especially when we could begin to identify them as groups? What did Robert Treman mean in 1917 when he cautioned the Women's Alliance that they should be more gracious to the newcomers among us? We didn't always accept new people easily. We were suspicious of them, and we have gone over the course of the last 100 years from people of ethnicity to accepting diversity. And how have we done that? And why have we now embraced diversity? So this is all part of what I will be trying to do. In addition, in 2019, or starting this fall, but really in 2019, you have ratified a history commission that Michael Lane and I are chairing. We are chairing that together?
No, you're chairing it, and I hopefully will be a member.
Oh, that's great. I love that. The first meeting will be this fall, and our first activity will be a reading at the public library of letters from people from Tompkins County during World War I, sort of from March until November of of 1918 when our soldiers went from Tompkins County to various army camps and then went abroad. And those letters are stirring and startling, and what the county was concerned about was really very interesting. And we had a couple of people who were charged with treason, including a pastor. And we had charges of people with names that sounded German as being not patriotic. So it all has to do with who are we as a people and how do we accept people. So I welcome you to that, and we will send you a notice when that is going to happen. The other thing that's going to happen is, or that's happening now, is in conjunction with working with Bruce Estes, we are bringing out a book called Living in Tompkins. This book contains 150 accounts of people who have found their way here. Most of them did not grow up here, a few did. How they came here, why they came here, and what being in this county has meant to them. And the obverse, what they mean to our being the people of Tompkins County. So we have a lot going on.
All right. Wow.
Questions? Carol, I have one. Looking at your budget, of course, since the bicentennial program has ended, the amount that was allocated to your budget for that has gone back to what you were had in the past, the $7,750.
Right.
Are you anticipating that the new historical commission will need any funds to operate, and should we be thinking about that during our budget process?
Well, you and I have talked about that, and I was advised by my county advisor that you should bring that to the legislature, not I.
Is that a yes?
Yes.
Thank you. Anyone else? Carol,
you did
a wonderful job for us. Thank you.
It is a privilege to do this. Thank you very much.
Wonderful.
And thank you for the Language of War book that was passed around.
Oh, good. We'll do more for you.
Thank you.
The last item, or the last presentation is from Kathy Covert, our legislature clerk. This is page 4, item 1, or section 4, 166, it's OTR 31, 1 OTR, and it has been recommended. You're ready, Kathy.
Okay. Thank you. So the first slide is the recommended budget, just a small increase, personnel expenses. And then full-time equivalents, unchanged. What I wanted to do tonight was just provide an overview of our budget and give you a snapshot of the last 5 years, what was adopted. We have one fiscal target with three budgeting units that fall under that. One of the budgeting units is the membership dues for NYSAC. And that typically increases about 3% every year. The other budgeting unit is for the clerk of the legislature. Now, I did not include personnel or fringes in this slide. I just wanted to show you the contractual expenses, and it shows by line item. We have the office supplies and printing, computer equipment with a 3-year replacement plan, and legal advertising, other copier related costs, service contracts, and postage and telephone. And all those expenses fall in the clerk of the legislature's budget. Now we have the legislature's side of the budget. And again, I didn't include the fringe or the salary lines, but I did include the food, that's for water and coffee, travel and training, and local mileage and membership dues. You'll notice that over the last 5 years, a lot of these line items have not changed much, especially in the legislature's side of the budget. I do have one OTR That's a target request. It's been recommended by the county administrator. It's for $2,500, increasing the travel and training line from $5,000 to $7,500. That completes the review, I guess.
Questions for Kathy? Be careful. Anna Kellis.
So I'm wondering how you came to that 2,500 line, because it seems that we've been pretty tight this year. We have, I think, one, two, three, four, at least five people who are on committees, NYSAC committees, which means that instead of the traditional, my understanding before I came onto the legislature was that the culture was to go to one of the two NYSAC meetings, and not many of the legislators went to the second one, but now that we have so many members who are on committees, that means that there are five of us going twice a year. So I'm wondering how you got to that and if that's enough to cover that, or you were thinking of that covering something else.
Well, it really depends on the number of legislators that attend. This was an unusual year. We had nine that attended the winter conference in January. We have six going this fall. Last year, we may have had one legislator that attended the fall conference. So it changes every year. I had put in an OTR last year as one time, knowing, you know, we had new legislators coming on, and I expected there would be interest in attending. We put this budget together in June, so, yeah. You know, this information was unknown. It's really a decision of the legislature if you want to increase this line. It's been $5,000 for as long as I can remember.
So I guess my question is, what is the cost for this fall?
For the full conference, for one legislator, it's a little over $1,000.
That's $6,000 that we're spending just this fall.
Well, that's an average. It depends. We have a couple legislators that are just going to a committee meeting.
Right.
There's no registration cost. Mm-hmm. The cost varies. That's just an average.
Okay, but we could, that $2,500 is probably going to be used up by this.
Yes, our budget has been, that line has been expended this year. I think we have a little over $100 left.
Martha?
Yeah, I was planning to maybe make that at least $5,000. As a request. I'm curious about the other membership. What was it? You had 945. What's that one for?
That's for the Cougar Lake Watershed Intermunicipal.
Of course. I don't know why that's not in planning, but okay. Yeah. I'm sure there's a reason. Is there money in any of this for the three of you for professional training?
No, that doesn't exist in our budget.
So if there's, you can go to anything that our HR department puts
correct
together,
we've
right?
taken advantage of that, yes.
Okay, but if there's anything at any other conference or any special training that you'd like to to go to,
there's
so
no money.
Could I ask you to think about a number for that?
Sure.
Okay. And Mike Lane had asked me to find out a little bit about NACO, National Association of County Membership, and I did check that their membership dues are according to the population in your county, and to get the actual number, you have to make a call. So I will follow up with that, but I don't have a number right now, but I just let folks know. I was going to at least check on that.
And something that some group here is going to have to, the committee is going to have to talk about is that something we want to do or not? We haven't in the past, but could be contingent on what the membership fee is. let's see. I've got Glenn Morey, then I've got Ann Corman.
My question was exactly what Martha brought up about your training. I noticed that you have $100 for Clerks Association.
Correct.
Do they have programs for you and your staff to go?
They have an annual conference and also a listserv. We share information on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So it's been very, very helpful.
I think you should start thinking about doing something on that line.
I have gone in the past because when the conference is close, I'll go like for a day.
So.
I have Henry Granison, then Leslie.
Sure.
Oh, I'm sorry, Skip. I already crossed you off, Ann. Excuse me. Ann Corman, please.
Thanks for your presentation, Kathy. So, personally, I would like to see money for the clerks to go to conferences in a separate line item, if possible, not mixed in with the legislature.
Mm-hmm. Henry Granison?
Oh. Yes. The mileage number that you've had, was that based on talks with GEO about changing the local mileage, or is that just based on last year?
It's based on last year's request in prior years.
Because I assume if the proposal goes through GEO, that number will change?
Yeah, we're still at least 6 weeks away from deciding that.
Are the potential numbers that can be decided would change?
Probably not.
Well, if it was taxed, I mean, that would be that would change that number or not?
Well, if you pay lump sums to people, how much would that be?
I mean, every option is on the table right now. So I'm sorry to be vague, but I really don't know how to answer it.
Okay. Leslie.
So I might have this wrong, but I thought several years ago we increased the monies in HR and personnel for training and staff development and so on, mm-hmm. that any department can access, not just the things that HR put on, but other departments can access outside of what they have in their budget. Do I have that wrong? My memory serving me wrong? Maybe we should look back at that. Because that's a place that I thought other folks, like Kathy and others, if they wanted to go,
Kevin may have an answer.
You're remembering correctly, Leslie. And if you wanted to see that in the budget book, it's under HR, and it's a separate unit. I think it's 1987 is the unit number, and it's training. And it's a significant amount.
It was a significant, it was like $80,000 or something. I don't remember, but I know it was a large amount of money the first time we did it to allow other departments to be able to access to go to trainings and that stuff. So I just want to point that out.
Is it used?
Yeah, I couldn't quantify the use. I have used it to attend, for example, trainings related to diversity and inclusion offered through the Human Services Coalition here locally. We as employees can apply to have our registration fees covered for, you know, appropriate things with our supervisors sign off on that.
I'm just curious how well known it is.
It's definitely one of the things that we're working on developing more use of. I don't think it's used as well as it could be across the organization. I know that's one of the things Amy Hendricks is going to be working on with HR, is really developing. It's really like a leadership development program. I would just add one thing, to put this as a seat out there with respect to Kathy's budget. Not in the near future, but at some point in the future, there will be some succession in these roles, and beginning to have training for new incoming folks is not a bad idea to have with respect to foundation, developing that foundation now in that budget process. So,
what is wrong with you?
I'm just being candid. And
Kathy's not allowed to go.
Kathy is
fired up until that.
I'm telling you, I don't. I said not in the near future.
Deb
but gosh. But Kathy has reminded me from time to time that this is coming. I said, well, we'll see about that. But just something to keep in mind that at some point you will have different folks in the office there, and you may need to have some different training needs too. So,
Deborah Dawson.
By no means is that saying you can stay as long as you want, but just saying, practically speaking.
Are you done?
I'm sorry.
So, I just wanted to mention that Amanda has been
dealing with a legislator in Suffolk County, in the process of which she discovered that
he has three
Suffolk
assistants.
County legislators. he has three assistants, and wait, he makes $100,000 a year. So, you know, I think we ought to be thinking seriously.
You better move to Suffolk County.
Touche.
Their populations are
quite and wealthy.
I think we're up to Martha.
Yeah, I think they have a couple million people or something. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but they're not as contentious as our people.
We'll see. Maybe.
Our people are special.
So I'm looking at the Human Resources Department. So it's section 4, page 132. And there's a line that says travel and training. What lesson?
I was looking for it, too.
That you think that might be it? Because it's a big number. I mean, so it was, in 2016, it was 83,000. 2017, it was 60,000. 2018, it was 165,000, almost.
That's a big number.
Kevin McGuire wants to speak to that.
If you flip the page over, you'll see the part that's dedicated to in-service training in a separate unit. That 1987 unit in-service training that I referred to earlier. The page 132 rolls up those two units and blends the department's travel training budget with the in-service. This gives you the breakout.
So what's the number? I see down below on page 134.
That's correct.
So 161,000 travel training there. So again, that's a very big number. So is that for departments to access for conferences and other things?
Some of it is, for example, the county's support. 10,000 of it is spent in the current year on the county's support for the TCOG Academy. Mm-hmm. And there are other things like that carve out pieces of that. I hope you'll ask the Human Resources Commissioner more about that, because I'm not in a good position to represent anything but my own experience with it.
Okay, so I guess the point is that if this is money that Kathy's department and other departments can access for that kind of thing, let's make sure they know about it and how to use it.
Absolutely.
And that's
exactly.
Why we put it there. So it's there to spend if that's the purpose. All right, thank you.
I just want to follow up on something Jason said, and that's about thinking in the future. Kathy, certainly since I've been involved with the legislature, I've seen the workload in your office go up considerably. Things that when we first started, you didn't even do the minutes for the committees. They were all done by the departments. So you've taken that role on. You used to have to do the extensive work to have the annual book published of our what's the name of it?
Journal of Proceedings.
Proceedings, and those kinds of things happened. And, you know, things do change. My question is, are we staffed enough? And you don't have to answer that, but I just think I want to put it in people's ear to think about that, because we do a lot more, and we demand a lot more from our legislative clerks. And so I just wanted to say that.
Where would we put in another one? That's a great question.
I don't think
100 persons.
Ann?
Three assistants.
Hold on, I'm finishing laughing inside at Amanda's thing. So are you understaffed? I'll ask it.
No, I don't think we're understaffed at this time, no.
I'll answer the second half of it, but they're overworked.
Yes.
They each need three assistants.
They need three assistants.
Yes,
they need
what I said.
I think the difficult part is being such a small office, you know, having three people. That can be difficult at times. But We do okay. Got great staff. And we get help from other departments, too, and that's been wonderful. You know, county administration, human resources, when needed, so.
Yes, Ann.
Are folks in your department able to, or are you guys able to take vacations? I mean, I know since I've been here, you've taken, mm-hmm. some people have taken some.
Yes.
You don't have a backlog of vacation because it's too hard to take it?
Not too bad. It's pretty good. We're doing okay.
So, yes, the answer is yes.
Okay, can we end it, Martha?
Yeah, I mean, so, Kevin, what would we do to move that intermunicipal organization membership over to planning, just change the department, is there any?
Someone might talk with Katie.
Okay. Okay.
Well, I think
that's the answer right there.
And I think Deborah Dawson is a member of that. So
of which?
Sure, but we have
Cuba, right. Lake.
If you may ask, it's a quick question.
It's just a logistical issue. I mean, if it should be accounted for in planning, we can talk to Katie about the history behind it. And if that's the rightful home for it, it's just a movement of the budget.
Okay, so just a movement. And okay. And I just want to say, I think that the IQM2 has just completely enabled the three of you to do a massive amount of additional work that very efficiently, very, you know, transparently for the rest of, I think, for the rest of the large staff, and things really move very well. And that was a really perfect, you know, a great buy.
Yes, that program has probably saved us increasing staff by one, if not two.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. Good meeting. Thank you all for your attention.